Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
There was a major hack where 143 million people, apparently in not just the United States, but also Canada and some other place, I think UK, have been affected by this. The story here from TechDirt says that chances are you've already heard about the massive security breach at Equifax that leaked a ton of important data on potentially 143 million people. Now, they say it was in the U.S., but I've seen other reports saying U.S., Canada, U.K. If you haven't, you need to pay more attention to the news, they say. I won't get into all the details of what happened here, but they want to point out a few things, and that is that they say Equifax's security breach is a complete disaster and will almost certainly get worse. They say, first, Equifax had been sitting on the knowledge of this breach since July. Now, there's some dispute over how quickly companies should disclose breaches like this, and it makes sense to give companies at least some time to get everything in order before going public. But here it's not clear what Equifax actually did. The company has seemed almost comically unprepared for this announcement in so many ways. Most incredibly, the site that Equifax set up for checking if your data has been compromised was on a consumer hosting plan using a free shared security certificate, a funky domain, and an anonymous whois record. And incredibly, it asked you for most of your social security number. And did we mention that the very morning of the day that Equifax announced this breach, they tweeted out about a newsletter that they had published about, quote, how safeguarding valuable customer data is critical, unquote. What the F, Equifax? Should we even mention that Equifax has been a key lobbying force against data breach bills? Those bills have some problems, but really, it's not a good look following all of this.
Nope.
And while there was some concern that signing up to check to see if you were a victim would force you out of being part of any class action lawsuit, that's since been clarified to not apply to any class action lawsuits over the breach. And you better believe that the company is going to be facing one heck of a class action lawsuit. A bunch of them are being filed, but they'll likely be consolidated. That's all background, of course.
This is basically a class action suit for everybody in North America.
A good chunk of them.
Yeah, a darn good chunk of them. The chances that it did affect you are much higher than the chances that it didn't. You basically have to have no credit.
I did run the little check thing on mine, and for whatever reason, they claimed I wasn't affected. So, you know, there's a chance that you weren't affected. But as far as, like, data hacks are concerned, this sounds like the biggest one I've ever heard of. I mean, you remember all the – every now and then something will pop up, like Target gets hacked and loses a few million credit card numbers or something like that. It's usually restricted to – kind of purchase-oriented data about you, like your credit card information, or it's restricted to maybe a lot of information was lost, but it was a relatively small number, like, you know, a million, so the odds are that you wouldn't be caught up into it. But this is the biggest number I've ever seen, and it's of stuff that includes very sensitive data, like your name, social security number, birth date, address, driver's license number. This is what they're saying was lost, and the point that the guy over at TechDirt is making here is that, well, they're saying what, you know, they lost, but what did they really lose? I mean, is this going to, later on, are we going to find out, and he gives other examples of where this has happened in the past, in data breaches, are we going to find out the loss was much larger later on than was initially reported?
And the answer is yes.
Or much more severe.
I want to bring something up, first of all, about Hurricane Irma. If you feel you may need to evacuate a place where there's a hurricane or any issue like that, you take 3 ice cubes and put them in a plastic bag and put that back in your freezer before you leave, okay? Then you leave, and you come back a week later, and you heard the power was out, and you have no clue how long the power was out.
Mm-hmm.
But you take a look in your freezer, and it's still 3 ice cubes. That means that the food in your freezer didn't thaw out either.
Mm-hmm.
See, because the ice cubes would have melted, and they would not be 3 ice cubes.
They'd just be some water, frozen water in a bag.
Okay, that's a good trick.
Yeah, it would be one chunk of ice. Now, the other thing I want to bring up here, by the way, the real problem with identity theft is that the banks you know, we'll send a credit card with your name on it to anybody who calls up and can rattle off all this stuff instead of requiring identification, which would be less profitable to the banks.
And then in other news, when you actually go to the Equifax website that they've put up to try to, you know, inform you as to whether or not your information was part of this leak, well, then they pitch you their own little service. Oh, well, you already weren't trusting us with your information, but we had it anyway, and we lost it. So now go ahead and sign on up. I mean, what do you got to lose? It's not like, you know, they
it's
don't
free,
already
right?
have your data. And they're saying it is a free, like, credit monitoring service, but CNBC is going to give you three reasons here why you might not want to sign up for it. They say don't be so quick to sign up for free credit monitoring from Equifax. The company announced late Thursday that it had suffered a breach potentially affecting 143 million U.S. consumers. Neil Crichton, chief executive of security firm CounterTrack, says, quote, "The first assumption a consumer should make is that they are affected," unquote. Exposed data includes, as we mentioned, social security numbers, birth dates, addresses, and in some cases driver's license numbers, said Equifax in its announcement. The breach also compromised credit card numbers for 209,000 consumers and dispute documents with personal identifying information for 182,000 consumers. Ryan O'Leary, the vice president of threat research at White Hat Security, says, quote, "That's everything an identity thief would need," unquote.
These credit protection companies, this is the new mandatory insurance, right? Like, you've got fire insurance on your home, you've got collision insurance on your car, you've got medical insurance in case you're in a terrible, you know, situation. This is the you're gonna have to have this as you know, for whatever reason, people are stealing identities out there, and you've got to have this kind of protection as time goes by.
Number three is the timing. Equifax is offering more than a month after the company discovered the breach and several months after the thieves began accessing the data may come too late for consumers. Thieves tend to sell and use such data quickly to capitalize on its value, said Crichton. In a Federal Trade Commission study from earlier this year, researchers found that thieves began to use stolen data within minutes of it being posted online.
Jeez.
They've probably already started using it. Now, I've also heard another claim, and I didn't look deeply into this story, that people claiming to be the hackers were trying to get $2+ million worth of Bitcoin from Equifax in order to not release the data. But then again, how do you really trust those people?
I suspect you don't.
Right. And he says here, you'll also need to keep watching. Thieves could easily make use of the stolen data for years. Mark, you mentioned this freeze idea where you can put your credit at these agencies, you can freeze it, and that'll make it so anybody applying for a credit card, including you, will not be able to actually apply for the credit
card. That's correct.
So it says here,
so for whatever reason, you need to buy a car or you need to do something, get a cell phone, switch your cell phone plan or whatever it is you might need to do. You're going to need to unfreeze your credit,
right,
which isn't fast and it isn't easy.
Have you done this before?
No, I listened to Clark Howard.
According to the story here, a freeze isn't a step to undertake lightly. Besides stopping criminals, it also prevents you from getting new credit. So you'll need to, as Mark pointed out, lift the freeze temporarily anytime you want a new credit card or refinancing a mortgage or whatever. But freezes don't always come cheap. There can be a fee each time you add, lift, or remove a freeze. And you'll face up to three fees for taking that action with each company. Well, wouldn't that be a butt burner if now that Equifax has lost your data, you then have to contact them to pay them to freeze your data? Gee, thanks.
And before we all, you know, stomp around and say things like, the government should have an easier system for us to deal with this sort of thing. Well, they should, but they should have had it already. They were in charge already. And this is what you got.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that in Europe, you can opt out of being in the credit bureau, having
really?
your name on file and stuff. So that's one thing I wanted to mention.
Is that if you don't want to even just have credit, you can just sort of get out of the system entirely?
They have to get your permission,
huh.
Basically. They have to get your approval before they can put you into a credit file.
Okay.
That'd be useful.
And, you know, I've had a credit freeze for like 5 years, and I used to get a lot of, you know, those, your pre-approved things in the mail.
Yep, offers.
And once I put a credit freeze, They stopped coming in the mail totally.
Interesting.
Huh. But a little bonus.
But one thing I was going to say that I was listening to Clark Howard also. He was talking about, you know, even though you got a credit freeze, the numbers they give you to unlock your credit freeze, that the 12-year-old could hack in there and get the numbers.
Oh, God.
That would unlock even if you have a credit freeze.
I stress to you, the listener, that alt-right is not a very well-defined term. There is a lot of different people out there with a lot of different ideas. I don't mind being called a white nationalist anymore. I think that that's a fine thing for a person to be, because I think a libertarian society would be full of white people. And so I think that pursuing white ethnic interests is a downright reasonable thing for white folks to do.
And that's something that we're going to disagree on, but you should be free to do whatever it is you want to do as far as in a libertarian society is concerned. For instance, I appreciate diversity, but all that aside, the government has locked you in a cage based on essentially your beliefs. And, you did get involved in some sort of fracas that did involve the use of pepper spray, which you've admitted to on video. But ultimately, you should have been granted bail, according to pretty much anybody that knows anything about the legal system, and they
even
didn't.
Even your detractors are saying this is essentially...
Some detractors.
Well, many of your detractors are saying this is basically a... you're being held as a political prisoner for your, things that you've said and that sort of thing.
Well, essentially, that's the idea. I mean, look, if I came down here and I pepper sprayed some old lady and I took a purse, I don't think I'd be sitting in this box right now, okay? What happens is, yes, I've confessed that I pepper sprayed a man in self-defense, but now two people who are not that man are accusing me of pepper spraying them maliciously as some kind of hate crime, but there's no hate crime laws here. So they're saying it's a malicious injury by caustic agent or explosive. I've got three charges and I face an upper limit of 20 years on each one of them. So I'm sitting here looking at 60 years in prison. I'm being held without bond basically because... Not even because I pepper sprayed somebody, because two people I didn't pepper spray are lying. DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, the federal government, apparently warned the UVA police in Charlottesville and the state of Virginia that Antifa, not us, not the alt-right, not the white supremacists, nationalists, whatever, not us, the Antifa, the leftists who attack us, who were warned by the Department of Homeland Security that they're terrorists.
Department of Homeland Security issued a confidential warning to law enforcement 3 days before the Charlottesville protest rally, saying that an escalating series of clashes had created a powder keg that would likely make the event, quote, among the most violent to date, unquote, between white supremacists and, they call them anarchists here. The law enforcement sensitive assessment obtained by Politico and reported for the first time raises questions about whether Charlottesville City and Virginia state authorities dropped the ball before and during a public event that was widely expected to draw huge crowds of armed, emotional, and antagonistic participants from around the country. Chris, do you think this was just typical bureaucratic incompetence, or was this some sort of plot to allow violence to happen on the part of the city?
I think that what the city wanted to happen, I don't know exactly what happened to all UVA, okay? I wasn't involved in any of the planning for that, to my knowledge, we did not put them on notice of that in advance. I know Saturday we had a permit. We got that permit yanked. We got the ACLU to get a court injunction, and they were supposed to give us that park all to ourselves and let us get our vehicles in there so that we did not come into contact with those people. We went down there for a law-abiding peaceful demonstration, and then what happened is the even though we had the court order, the government acted like we didn't have it.
We cannot create a show that's going to please everybody. It's just not a possibility. So I don't even try. I do the show that I want to listen to, and that show is Free Talk Live. And unfortunately, you know, that does mean we're open phones, and there can be some bad times with open phones, just like there can be some amazing times with open phones. I think you just got to kind of take the bad with the good, and we appreciate everybody who stays tuned as long as they stay tuned. The law enforcement sensitive assessment that has been obtained by Politico and reported for the first time raises questions about whether Charlottesville City and Virginia state authorities dropped the ball before, during, before and during a public event that was widely expected to draw huge crowds of armed, emotional, and antagonistic participants from around the country.
Yeah, those are the people you want mixing it up together.
The August 9th report by the Department of Homeland Security Office of Intelligence and Analysis was done in coordination with local, state, and federal authorities at the Virginia Fusion Center. It stated that white supremacists and anti-fascist Antifa extremists had clashed twice before in Charlottesville at a white nationalist rally in May and a Ku Klux Klan gathering on July 7th. At each event, anarchist extremists, unquote, attacked protesters who had been issued permits, leading to fights, injuries, arrests, and at least two felony charges of assault and battery. Now, the funny thing is here, I'm pretty sure the Antifa people aren't anarchists, right? These are people who want government. The Antifa people.
Yeah, I can't imagine why they're using the term anarchist in that circumstance. Some of them may claim to be anarchists, but, you know, mostly the people who claim to be anarchists are just communists who don't understand what communism is or anarchism or any of that stuff.
Right, which is why the term anarchist is just, I never understand why people want to try to repair that term. It's just so bad-mouthed in media and in, you know, police paperwork and things like this. You've got so much confusion surrounding the term and, you know, what it means for folks. I don't think it's...
I frankly think it's a useless term, but...
It's worse than useless. It's damaging.
A lot of people like it. You know, it's zippy and it catches people's attention.
That much is true, but you aren't going to get the right kind of attention, I think, from a lot of people.
Certainly not on the radio, because if you just go on the radio and claim, I'm an anarchist, and you don't explain what that means to you, because it seems to mean something different to just about everybody who says it, then, you know, it's not going to work out well.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy. So I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
It is open phones every night here on Free Talk Live, and I think some people, when they listen to a national show, I was actually talking with Riley Blake on his show today, Anarcho Agenda, and he interviewed me. It was very nice, and I'm sure that'll be coming up on an upcoming episode of his, but he had pointed out that maybe some people don't understand that it's really actually pretty easy to get on the air here on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, they talk about it being very difficult to get on the air on like Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, and the last numbers I saw, Rush Limbaugh had more than 10 million listeners.
Yeah.
Compare that to the highest numbers I've seen for Free Talk Live at being like 300,000.
Yeah,
quarter million listeners. Plus the fact that we're on at a different time. And Rush may take one call an hour, maybe as few as one call a show.
Yeah.
Whereas
make you wait through 3 hours and then finally take a call.
Free Talk Live can take, man, we've taken as many as 20, 25 calls in a show.
For sure.
You know, it's just a heck of a lot easier.
Yeah. If you don't hear somebody on the air with us, that means nobody is on the phones most
Not
of the time.
Always.
Most
yeah,
of the
yeah.
time. Almost 90, you know, 5% of the time, unless there's some other extreme reason or circumstance to not go to those calls. Well, it's generally what we do here, which is why the Chronics are so, you know, good at getting on, because they're wise enough to know that they can. That's just part of the game here. 3 days after the DHS report was distributed to law enforcement, hundreds of combatants, many of them armed, collided at the rally at Charlottesville's Emancipation Park, a flashpoint between the feuding groups since the city changed its name from Robert E. Lee Park back in June. After a day of violent street fights, a suspected neo-Nazi sympathizer allegedly mowed down a crowd of counter-protesters, killing one and injuring at least 19 others. In the ensuing hours and days, President Donald Trump's insistence...
It makes you wonder if they hadn't put these two groups against each other and had this little war, whether that guy would have ever done what he did.
Indeed. President Donald Trump's insistence that both sides bore responsibility for the violence turned the event into a political watershed, as many Republicans and Democrats chastised him for failing to condemn white supremacists more directly. Charlottesville police already have been criticized for their response to the rally, including for failing to show up in riot gear and for failing to deploy in large enough numbers to separate the groups, beginning with a torchlight march held by white supremacists the night before. Some law enforcement experts, when briefed on the report by Politico, said it reinforced their concerns about the response of law enforcement agencies in Charlottesville. James Gagliano, a recently retired FBI supervisory special agent, said in an interview, quote, "It is unconscionable that with so much advance notice of the declared intentions of extremist groups from the left and right vowing to descend upon Charlottesville that law enforcement was not better prepared." He continued saying, quote, "Stronger police presence as a deterrence and better separation between the two groups should have been part of the security plan." But according to Chris Cantwell, who has called from his jail cell, he says the police basically just let this happen. The video shows a UC Berkeley bicycle officer citing a bacon hot dog vendor on campus and removing cash from his wallet.
Probably got reported by a vegan.
For operating without a permit. In the video taken by Martin Flores, UCPD officer is seen pulling cash out of the vendor's wallet and folding it into his hand. The vendor objects and then stands by as the officer puts the money away and begins to write a citation. We'll play the audio for you here in moments. In a statement released Monday, UC Berkeley Vice Chancellor Scott Biddy said vendors are typically given warnings before a citation and explained what prompted the officer to intervene. Quote, "We have instructed our officers to monitor illegal vending outside our event venues. This action has been motivated, at least in part, by issues of public health. The interests of local
small... They always use public health.
The interests of local small businessmen and even human trafficking." Huh?
Well, the idea would be that you see that they always
selling
try
sex slaves outside.
It doesn't have to be
football
sex
game.
Look, any job that somebody doesn't want to do, it's human trafficking. You know, the coyotes bringing people for a better life in the United States at ridiculous prices. That some of them die in these you know, hot boxes or whatever. Human trafficking. It's all human.
The suggestion is that they're going to force them to work as a hot dog vendor at the UC Berkeley.
That's kind of, to some extent, what they're saying, yes.
I guess when your guest from the jail paper or your co-host from the jail paper was on, I forget his name.
Thomas Parisi.
Is he one of the Chris's? Is he one of the Chris's?
No, it's Thomas. Thomas Parisi.
Okay. Now, he was on and indicated that there was something going on with some shadowy liquor enforcement bureaucracy running a bus and some stopping people or something like that. Were you on that night when he was talking about this?
Yeah, this was Friday. Was it Friday night? No, Saturday night. Anyway, it was this weekend when liquor enforcement was in town in a big way here in Keene. He had gone down there early in the evening and had spotted the liquor enforcement truck or van or whatever you want to call it, the big old RV that they've got. That was parked in the downtown Keene area, and they had multiple undercover cars and undercover officers canvassing the streets, going into different bars and harassing people inside, demanding identification, observing the doormen, and, you know, seeing if they were following whatever the stupid rules are that the Liquor Commission puts on them to enforce their arbitrary edicts. And so then a number of us went out later on that night and, you know, did some Know Your Rights outreach from copblock.org and, you know, occupied the streets to some extent to help the students. You know, there's always a fresh batch of students here every year.
And they're just basically a bunch of high school kids that don't know what the heck they're doing.
Right, to help them know their rights. So that's kind of what that was all about. We're at the stage in the secession game where we just want people to think about it. We want people to talk about it. We want to get those conversations started, and we want to get those gears turning in people's heads to where they can think about this, even if they don't think it's possible right now. You know, they may think that it's possible later on down the line, or, you know, later on down the line once they hear about it more, right? Like, so maybe the first time it's like, oh, yeah, it's a neat idea. It's never going to happen. But then if they start seeing, you know, state representatives talking about it, or it starts getting discussed on other talk shows, and, you know, they're hearing about it from different people in their lives, that's when it starts to be more of a, well, maybe this is possible kind of thing. At least I would like to hope that that's the case.
I like to use the example of domesticated animals versus wild animals. You know, I mean, you can imagine. Look, if you let your dog out the backyard, it's liable to come back, right? You know, like you let it out the back door and it's going to go do its business and, you know, maybe run around and bark at some stuff and then, you know, act free and then come on back in.
Time
to
eat.
Where the free food is. Yeah. You know, the belly rubs and everything that's wonderful. Now, by the way, you love your dog and you take good care of your dog. The state doesn't love you and it doesn't take good care of you. But it gives a sort of subsistence, and it's the same attitude. Whereas, you know, somebody should be able to, your dog should be able to choose, if it can take care of itself, should be able to choose to be free. The state doesn't allow that. You know, you're a domesticated dog and you will stay here. You will do what you're told and, you know, that sort of thing.
Or you'll get beat.
And the other dogs are all like, oh, why in the world do you want to be free? It's all great over here in the domesticated land. And, you know, some dogs are just born to howl.
Where can folks go to download your podcast?
They can go to anarchoagenda.libsyn.com. That's A-N-A-R-C-H-O, agenda.libsyn, L-I-B-S-Y-N.com.
All right.
I do a mixture of short shows and long shows, and I mix in some Scottish stuff for fun. So.
We did like an hour-long interview today. It was great. That's going to be upcoming on your feed at some point in the near future. But it, you know, kind of echoes some of the discussion we were having today about the different types of people in the world, that there's the kind of people that want to be taken care of, and then there's the kind of people that want to take the risk of being able to live free and, you know, be able to take care of themselves, or, you know, not having some sort of authoritarian group trying to tell them how to live. And it almost does seem like people are born one way or the other. I don't know if that's
right.
True. I don't know if that's true, but I feel like I've always been anti-authority for as long as I have memories.
You don't have to be somebody who was born to howl at the moon in order to be a libertarian, though.
I am a web developer, but I also run my own company that I started in 2011 that has about 6 million people around the world using our apps.
Sweet.
In over 110 countries. Yeah. So I really do want to make a difference, and I do believe in decentralizing power and empowering people and uniting communities. So I, so to speak, put my money where my mouth is, and we're designing a cryptocurrency also. But I don't want to really, you know, talk about it on the air that much right now. I just wanted to talk about what is money and what is the value of money, okay?
Yeah, let's talk about
I know
that.
You guys are, so yeah, like, okay, I know you guys are a little bit down on fractional reserve banking because the bank takes your money and then lends out more than is on reserve and so forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you don't like when the government prints money either, because you want what Austrian economics call sound money. You know, you just want something to sound like Ron Paul. Here's the thing. I want to put your mind in a different direction, kind of the other way. Think about PayPal, okay? Think about all these payment networks like Venmo, whatever, right? You want to pay someone, you send these electronic credits through Venmo, through PayPal, whatever, in their internal network, right?
Right.
And to pay them out, they need to have money on reserve. So if they pay them out in euros, they need to have some euros on reserve, right?
Right.
They have in dollars. So these are actually very highly sophisticated internal networks that have reserves. They have reserves that they have to pay out to people, but a lot of the time, if it's just a dumb payment network, it right away gets cashed out. The advantages of a local currency is, imagine you go to a casino and you buy the chips, right?
Yeah, that's a local currency.
Right, that's the local currency. How many times would you leave a casino without cashing out your chips? You might leave one for like a souvenir, but you're not going to use those chips outside the casino.
I think
right?
Some people do in like Vegas, though. I think that there is a, you know, a culture of using chips for maybe tips and things like that. So, you know, maybe on the local level they might. But go ahead, make your point.
Okay, so but you don't go back to New York and use them there.
No, you sure don't.
So, right, whatever is in Vegas stays in Vegas, and that's the point of the local community currency. Is that Detroit never runs out of dollars because Detroit bucks are circulating. And that unemployed plumber can go and fix your leak for Detroit bucks. And they can cash out the Detroit bucks, the dollars, through the Detroit bank exchange. And so the local currency improves the resiliency, first of all, of the local community, because it can never really go bankrupt anymore, because it always can't run out of its own currency.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.